Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Touchdown, the count victimized by Talib.
Manziel feeling the pressure, extending the play, turning the shoulders, back across the green and intercepted by Jaquaski Tart, the rookie out of Samford, on an ill-advised heave from Manziel.
Drouin, juke score! He set it up for Palat.
Drouin has made two wonderful plays tonight on the power play.
Richard turns, shoots it. It's into the crowd. Another shot coming from Richards. And another maybe. And the blue light is on. This game is done. Tampa Bay wins it.
Well, we obviously lost the game on specialty teams, both the power play and penalty kill. Regarding the power play, I thought we had too many unforced errors. I didn't think we won enough pucks when they did pressure us. They did a good job not letting us set up, and so you got to win those pucks. Once we got set up, we didn't do, in my opinion, probably a good enough job of finding a way to get pucks to the net.
Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Well, that didn't go as planned, but here we go anyway, right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We are Toledo's sports leader, and oh my goodness, do we have a lot of stuff to lead on today. Welcome to the extravaganza. My, oh my, you just heard a little bit there from, what? Johnny Manziel, what? Yeah, what that was is just a reminder that the Cleveland Browns, who have continued to search for their franchise quarterback since their return in 1999, they're very likely not going to find that person in this year's draft either. Why? Massive trade. Massive trade within the last hour. Browns dealing the number two overall pick to the Eagles. We'll have the details and break it down with Scott Petrak. You also heard a little bit from the wings there. And we were trying to get you some of the Pistons and the Cavaliers highlights and audio as well. We'll do that next time around. But my goodness gracious, there is a lot to talk about now. It is so ironic, and it is so funny. And, in fact, before I even set this up, let me bring Scott Petrak onto the air. Scott Petrak is a Browns beat writer. We originally, I reached out to Scott, what, 3 hours ago maybe, 2 hours ago? Yeah. And said, hey, Scott, let's talk a little bit about the rumors about the Browns possibly shopping the number two pick. He said, sure, be fun. An hour later, okay, can you still talk or do you have to go cover the press conference announcing the Browns have traded their number two overall pick? And he may indeed have to do that within the next hour, so we got him now to start the show. Scott, how are you, bud?
I'm good, Bobby. How are you?
I'm good, too. Really, really intrigued by this deal. Before we go through the nuts and bolts and what the Browns receive for the number two overall pick, by the way, do you have any idea, Kush, do you have any idea, when is the last time that the number one and number two picks were traded in the same season?
Oh, that's good. Hang on. That's going to take some research. Hang on.
Unless, Scott, you already know. Do you know by chance?
I don't off the top of my head.
That's crazily. I mean, I think that's really, really rare. What we just saw, a huge stockpile of picks going to the Titans, which they, of course, traded that pick to the Rams, the number one overall. Now, big, giant stockpile to the Browns from the Eagles. I don't know the last time something like that has happened. So that's part one, and Jim will do a little research on that. But part two, Scotty, I was browsing the sports news, as I do each and every day, of course, in preparation for this show, and there's a really neat feature on ESPN.com right now. And it's headlined, "The Day the Browns Passed on Big Ben." And it's going back to the 2000, what year was that, four?
Yep.
I'm sorry?
No, 2004.
Yeah, 2004 draft in which the Browns could have taken Ben Roethlisberger with the number six overall pick. Now, we know, of course, at the top of that draft there was Eli Manning and Phillip Rivers and how they swapped teams. And Ben Roethlisberger, of course, ended up going 11 overall, if memory serves. I'm doing all this from memory. And this is, you know, the one, you know, he of course played in Ohio at Miami of Ohio in the MAC. And it was thought by the Browns at the time and Butch Davis at the time that he was just not ready and less than prepared, if you will, because the MAC wasn't good enough competition. And I read that story and I just kind of wanted to discuss it today on its own merits, because imagine what could have been had the Browns drafted this guy who's on a Hall of Fame track right now in his career with two championships and more. And, Scott, it's trippy to me that this feature ran today, and now we're finding out that the Browns essentially are passing on another potential franchise quarterback. By trading this number two pick away, they're not going to get Goff or Wentz, and they've probably decided they're going to take a quarterback later on, probably not with number eight, I would imagine. And what if this is history repeating itself on the day they just write about and kind of reminisce on the Big Ben draft miss, that they may be doing the same thing with another potential future franchise quarterback? What say you?
Yeah, well, to me, passing on Big Ben is the biggest mistake the franchise has made since it's been back. You know, I mean, there's been a bunch of mistakes, obviously, and you can point to several poor draft choices at the top of the draft, but to me, that's number one. If they had drafted Ben instead of Kellen Winslow, who they traded they traded a second rounder to move up one spot to take Kellen Winslow.
Yeah, from like 6th to 5th or 7th to 6th. Something.
I think the franchise would be in completely different shape. I think Ben could have played here with less talent around him and still succeeded because he's such a big guy. You know, he would have absorbed the blows. I think he can almost win by himself. That's a huge loss. And frankly, that's what this trade's going to be judged on, Bob. If Carson Wentz, let's assume Goff goes number one to L.A. and Wentz goes number two to Philly. Mm-hmm. Then this trade will be judged on if Carson Wentz turns into a superstar. If he does, then unless the Browns find another quarterback out of this draft, then the Browns will be losers because they gave up a chance at another superstar quarterback. This franchise will never be contenders if they don't have a legitimate quarterback.
So, very, very well said, which is exactly kind of the point I was trying to make that I labored to make in the introduction of that. You know, looking at the Browns, it doesn't matter what they got, and it was Kellen Winslow, the trade, or the decision, I beg your pardon, the decision to not draft Roethlisberger was kind of borne out in terms of its how it will go down and how it will be remembered in history by how well Roethlisberger developed into the franchise quarterback he did. Same thing here. If Wentz or Goff or both go on to be studs, the Browns, it doesn't really matter what they do with these picks. Unless what, Scott? Unless they get, you know, a multi-time Pro Bowler at number eight and use next year's number one and draft another stud who becomes a Pro Bowler if they hit on this big bucket of picks that they've got right now in this trade, then maybe they can mitigate some of that damage. But, you know, there are only so many opportunities afforded to every franchise in their, you know, in their lives, in the history of the franchise, to get your quote-unquote franchise quarterback. And the Browns have essentially said, this isn't the time for us to get ours.
Now, before we go, before you answer that, Scott, real quick, I did finally find one, guys. The last time that one and two were traded were the 1997 draft. The one, and there's other picks, obviously. One was traded between the Jets and the Rams. Rams took Orlando Pace. The number two was traded away by New Orleans to the Raiders, obviously back in Oakland at this time, and they took Darrell Russell. So that's the last time it happened.
Interesting. So two linemen went at the top of that that time. This time it's going to be two quarterbacks. So, Scott, go ahead. Your thoughts. What would the Browns have to do here, no matter what happened? Well, again, assuming superstardom for Goff and Wentz, they can still make this worth it if they really hit home runs with these picks.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's step one, is to not miss on these picks. But I think included in there needs to be finding a quarterback. Now, if RG3 turns out to be the answer quarterback, then that's fine. And if that's what they're gauging, if that's part of the reason they trade down, okay. If they find a quarterback, let's say they take Paxton Lynch at number 8, or they take Paxton Lynch at 15 because they trade back again with Tennessee, and Lynch turns out to be a top 12 quarterback, then it's fine. Or if they get a guy with next year's number 1. I mean, there's a number of ways to get your quarterback, but that's got to be priority number 1 for the Browns. And really, that's how you have to view everything, and that's how this trade will be viewed. It's not only what Wentz and Goff do, but when do the Browns finally answer that gaping hole at quarterback? Now, I like both Goff and Wentz, and I like them both enough to take it number 2. So whoever the Rams took, I would have been fine taking the second guy. Now, the only reason, the only way I can accept a trade from the Browns and view it as okay is if they were convinced that Wentz wasn't going to be the guy. Because you can't take a quarterback at number two that you have serious doubts about.
Sure.
So if that was the case, then the right move is to move back. But personally, I like both guys enough to pull the trigger at number two.
So you disagree with the decision here?
I do. Well, from my scouting, and obviously I've watched six of Goff's games and six of Wentz games or whatever, and I haven't studied him like they do. So if they did the study and they decided Wentz is not worth the number two pick in the draft, then this is the right move. If they made the move strictly because they believe you're better off with more draft picks, that I disagree with, because to me, one quarterback is worth 12 draft picks if you get the right quarterback. And obviously, that's what Philadelphia thinks, because they're moving up to get a quarterback.
Obviously, and that's exactly what the Rams felt, too. That it is that important, that you can fill the holes in other ways that you're going to leave with the picks that you're losing, but you can't fill the hole at quarterback. If anybody should understand that, again, not just because of the Big Ben story that I just told and the kind of crazy report that just came, you know, that I just read about it, but 25 names on that jersey, right? How many names are on
24.
That jersey? 24. This will, whoever, you know, is Robert Griffin 25? Is that how it'll work?
Yep.
All right, so Griffin will be 25, and again, you know, it's funny, they led that Big Ben story on ESPN.com that I was mentioning about Jeremy Fowler. They led it with, that thing could have stopped at six. That list could have stopped at six, going back to the Roethlisberger story there. All they had to do, I mean, it would have read, where did it go for crying out? Yeah, Couch, Detmer, Wynn, Peterson, Holcomb, Roethlisberger. And it was stopped right there. There is no 25-name jersey on it. And so if anybody should know, of all the 32 teams in this league, if anybody should know how hard it is to find your franchise quarterback, and you're sitting there with the number two pick and a potential franchise guy there, it would be the Cleveland Browns. So they really must not like Carson Wentz as much as perhaps a lot of other people do.
Well, that's what I'm assuming. Now, we have not talked to the Browns yet. We don't know if there's a press conference yet, or at least I didn't when I started talking to you.
Mm-hmm.
So we've not heard any reaction. But that's my assumption, is that they don't love Carson Wentz. But this is a new regime, so I don't think – I think sometimes they ignore the history of the organization. They figure we didn't make those mistakes and maybe not paying close enough attention to that. And the second unknown or variable is the new focus on analytics. And maybe the analytics and the data suggest so strongly that volume of picks is more important than gambling on – quote-unquote, gambling on a quarterback. Now, that could very well be, and that's what I would disagree with. Now, you can show me all the numbers, and maybe you could convince me, but my thought is you have to do whatever you can to get that quarterback, and if you have that chance, it supersedes all the other stuff. And that's why I'm dying to talk to Sashi Brown or Paul DePodesta and really try to get to the bottom of why they thought this was the right move.
That's a really, really great point. And they didn't pay Paul DePodesta whatever it took to get him to leave the Mets, you know, in another sport and come over here and do number crunching and statistical analysis and analytics for them for nothing. They're not paying him all of that money to sit there and do nothing. There has to be some component of that in it, in terms of if you have X number of picks spread out over X number of rounds, spread out over the next couple of years, this is what history and the numbers say your success rate will be versus just getting the quarterback. There's got to be something to that. I'm not a big believer in that stuff. I'm a big, you know, and maybe it's because I don't want to be. Maybe it's I don't want to be nerd guy. But truthfully, I'm a big believer in just, you know, what the eyes see, the eyes see. You don't have to tell me, you know, what stats and high-level quantum physics is gonna tell me about this. And I'm kind of with you, Scott. My eyes tell me they needed to get a quarterback here. Now, there is part of me that is somewhat relieved isn't the right word. Okay with this, because I felt badly for Robert Griffin III. I like him, and I liked him when he came out. I liked him when he was in Washington, when he was the Offensive Rookie of the Year, and I want to see him succeed. And my fear, you and I talked about this after the deal, my fear was that, you know, RG3 is the starter for now until he has a two-pick game or a two-pick half maybe, and the fans are screaming, Carson, Carson, like they did with Brady, and so many others down the line. And that was my fear. And now whoever the quarterback that they take is, and they will take one, whether it's later, you know, in the first round, second round, whatever the case might be, or maybe down they'll pull a trigger on a Cardale Jones in the fourth round or something, that pressure won't be there, and it will be kind of up to Robert Griffin. So part of me says that I'm okay with this from Griffin's standpoint. Do you think this is a just big vote of confidence from Hugh Jackson that I really like? Maybe he talked to Sashi and Dee Podesta and Jimmy Haslam and said, I really, really like Robert. We got a young guy here who's got franchise potential. We're okay.
Oh, I certainly think it's part of it, Bob. And, you know, when they signed RG3, people with the Browns would say, it's not going to affect whether or not we draft the quarterback. And I always found that silly. Well, then why would you sign a guy for a two-year, $15 million deal that you think has significant upside and potential? It didn't make sense to me to then necessarily take a quarterback at two, which is why I thought the RG3 trade opened up the door for a trade down. And obviously that's what happened. I think this does. We talk to Robert tomorrow after the minicamp practice, and the first question for me is going to be, do you feel now that this is your job and your team, like the Browns have handed you that? And that's fine, but, you know, if you want to play optimist, that's fine. And he has a lot of potential, and he's got all the talent in the world. He's also had three bad years in a row, didn't even play last year. Are you just setting your franchise back a year or two, hoping you kind of, you know, struck gold with RG3? I think that's a very legitimate possibility. But it does also give him the option of taking a guy like Paxton Lynch, who is a developmental quarterback more so than a Goff or a Wentz. And I think Lynch would sit for a year or two, maybe you see what you have from RG3, and that could be the best of both worlds. You have RG3, you get your young quarterback with a lot of potential, and I could see that working. It's just a matter of where they wind up drafting.
That's what I was going to ask you. Where would they get him? They wouldn't take him as high as number eight, certainly. And what would their next pick be now? What's their next pick after eight?
Well, it's 32, and he's not going to be there at 32.
Okay.
Eight's an option. It really is, Bob. They could decide that. Yeah, I think they could say, you know what, we like this guy maybe more than Wentz, so we're going to get him at eight, and we accrued all these other picks, which I could live with. I really could. If you like a quarterback, which obviously we've talked about the importance of the position, take him whenever you can get him. The other option is Tennessee supposedly wants to trade back up from 15 after moving down from number one. So maybe you trade back to 15, acquire whatever that would give you, a number two or number two and a three, and then you can take Lynch at 15 if you think he's going to be there. To me, those options are both in play.
Scott Petrak is a Browns beat writer covering the team, and we're breaking down the breaking news literally within the last hour or so now. The Browns have traded the number two overall pick to the Philadelphia Eagles. What they get in return is the number eight overall pick currently, well, that was held by the Eagles, so they swapped two for eight. And in exchange for going down six spots, they get a third rounder this year, number 77 overall. They get a fourth rounder this year, number 100 overall. They get the Eagles' first rounder next year in the 2017 draft, and their second rounder in 2018. The Browns also have to cough up a 2017 fourth round pick. So a lot of picks, a lot of high round picks, obviously, Scott. Paxton Lynch you said that he would still be then if they took him at number eight. He's an option. This is a top 10 quarterback then. Isn't that kind of the same thing as if you were to take a top two quarterback, a guy who's kind of expected to come in and compete and play relatively quickly and not willing to be sitting for 2 years or more?
Well, I think it changes because of the guy Paxton Lynch is in his background. Mm-hmm. He ran like a wing tee in high school, so he didn't throw the ball that much. He went to Memphis. They ran the spread offense at Memphis. I'm almost sure, positive, that he left Memphis early because they had a coaching change. He decided it was time to come out. He's really raw. He's 6'7", a really good athlete. He compares himself to a guy like Cam Newton. That's what's coming out of Lynch. So he's got a lot of upside. He's got a big arm, but he's not ready. And I think the other two quarterbacks, there'd be a segment of the population saying he is ready. And I don't think Lynch would even say he's ready. So I think there wouldn't be the pressure to play him right away like there would have been with the other two.
Flip side of this, though, because obviously the quarterback talk is still going to be, you know, preeminent when it comes to the Browns. The flip side of this, though, is now the Browns for this draft have 12 total selections, two in the third round, three in the fourth round, including the first and second pick of the fourth round. So they have a couple back-to-backs. I've always been a believer that the way the NFL and NFL draft works, you should be able to find contributors and or starters in any of the first three rounds, definitely, maybe the fourth, depending on how you pick. We all know this team has holes everywhere outside a quarterback. And I'm still in the camp that I like that if they're going to go this route, I like that they're acquiring picks. Obviously, we can have the jokes about them screwing up picks. We've seen all those already today and probably to come. But with all these picks, 12 in total in this draft, how important is it that they are able to get some of these holes filled with this multitude of picks?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's crucial, and that's why you make the trade. You make the trade because you don't love a quarterback. You don't think any of the other guys, the Jalen Ramsey or the Tunsil, is going to be a Hall of Famer. So then you acquire picks. And this roster, as much as any roster in the league, needs to be rebuilt, and it needs a vast number of players.
It's the worst roster in the league, isn't it, Scott? Would you agree? It's the worst roster in the league.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Top to bottom, I would agree with everything they lost in free agency in the secondary, linebackers, offensive line, receivers. I mean, really, there's one strength of the team, I think, in the defensive line. That's pretty solid. I think in literally every other position in the backfield and the ones I just named, it's the worst roster in the league. So certainly having 12 picks in seven rounds is a good thing because you have so many different places to go. But as Jim just said, Scotty, the Browns' track record in turning those picks into players, starters, stars, especially if they're first two-round guys, is just so awful. It just comes down to who's making the picks this time around, right?
Well, that's exactly right. And that's why you need Sacha Brown and Andrew Berry, the guys who are going to be evaluating and making the pick. They have to get it right where Ray Farmer got it wrong and Joe Banner got it wrong. And then you can argue how good a Tom Heckert or Phil Savage was. But the last two drafting regimes have been terrible. And that's where this one has to be better. So I like having as many picks as possible. That's not a negative. The negative is, did you pass on your quarterback when you still would have had 10 picks?
Right. Yeah, and that's a great point. And of course, you can't really evaluate that even until next year because you get the number one from the Eagles next year. And then the 2 and 18 also, they're number 2 and 18 in 2018 too. You have to see what you turn those into. But I completely agree. How much faith do you have? I mean, and I don't know. You know the inner workings of the Browns right now better than I do. You said that Andrew Berry, Sacha Brown and Andrew Berry are going to be the ones making the picks. Is that accurate? Are they the be-all, end-all deciding guys, or will they defer to their new head coach who knows more about football, certainly, than Sacha Brown, you know, I don't want to say ever will, but certainly does to this point, given his history. He's never been a player personnel guy. He's never been a GM. He's never run a draft. Hugh Jackson has been through the wars. I would hope they're going to defer to Hugh Jackson to make these picks, or is that not right?
Well, I don't think it's right, Bob. I think they defer to him at quarterback. And maybe Hugh did not love Carson Wentz, and it is as simple as that. Maybe he loved RG3, didn't love Wentz, and therefore this is how the Browns are going to proceed. But I think when it comes to, let's say, number 32, and if you take quarterback off the board, then I think it's the other guys deciding who they want. You know, Hugh is a football guy, but these guys have scouted. Or Sashi hasn't been a scout, but Andrew Berry has, and all the scouts have been scouts. That's what they get paid for. This is when they make their monies through the draft. And so I think Hugh will have significant impact, especially early in the regime. You know, maybe down the road it'll be more front office than Hugh. But I think his biggest impact is quarterback, receiver, kind of those skill guys that he spent his lifetime coaching.
So given all of that, and I get what you're saying that Berry has and the scouts have been scouts, but again, Sacha Brown has never, ever done this. This is not in his wheelhouse. It's his first time going through this. It's a heck of a trial by fire, if you ask me. You know, giving him the final control of all of the picks, maybe save for the quarterback one that you say that you know, he'll trust Hugh on. Is he capable of this? Obviously Jimmy Haslam thinks he is, but I worry a great deal, Scott, that a guy who just has never done this before is going to know how to find stars at each of these spots in the early rounds and contributors, if not starters, in the middle rounds, and then obviously it's flyers when you get down to the end of the bottom rounds.
Well, yeah, I mean, it makes all the sense in the world to be worried, Bob. He's never done it before. And that's been the problem with many of these Browns regimes. Ray Farmer had never done it before.
Bingo!
You know, Joe Banner had kind of done it. Not to that degree. And, you know, so Sashi hasn't done it, but Jimmy Haslam put all his faith in him, and he said on the last day of the season when he announced all the changes that Sasha was going to be running the draft and have final say of the 53. So we're going to have to see how he does.
That scares the bejesus out of me. How much will he rely on whatever spreadsheet Paul Podesta hands him? I mean, is that what's going to happen? Instead of writing it on a card, just take up to the commissioner? Is it going to be a D. Podesta spreadsheet and send it up there and say, this is what we came up with. This is what the numbers say we should do here. Here you go, commissioner. What do you think?
Yeah, I think where the analytics come into play more is, okay, this position we value more than we value position X more than position Y, so therefore we should target this position at number 8 or at number 32. When it comes down to the individual players, then I think that's where the scouts come in. So I think that's how it will be shaped. So that, therefore, you need a bunch of people working together. You need the analytics people getting their decisions right, and then you need the scouts picking the right players.
Last thing, Scott, and we really appreciate your time on this. If they don't go with a Lynch at number 8, because there are a lot of other options, and as we talked about, there's so many holes and so many big places for this football team. Where do you think they would find their quarterback? Do you think it would be a Connor Cook? Do you think it would be down in the middle round somewhere, in one of these flyer guys like Cardale, or what do you think if they don't go Lynch?
Yeah, Bob, I really think they're all options are on the table then if they don't get Lynch. I think Coach at 32, but there's no guarantee he's left at 32. Mm-hmm. Something tells me they don't love Cardale, but maybe that's just me not loving Cardale and kind of putting it on them. Do you take that Prescott? He just had a DUI, arrest. Kevin Hogan out of Stanford is a developmental guy. There's a few of those guys out there that have been off the radar because we've been so focused on the Goffs and Wentz. I assume, and they've said that they'll take one somewhere, but now it's a mystery. It's a mystery if it's number 8, and it's a mystery does it last all the way to the 5th round before they take a quarterback.
All right, good stuff from Scott Petrak. The football world has been rocked again today. The second blockbuster trade in the top 2 picks just a week or so after the Titans deal the number 1 pick for a boatload of picks. Who got the better daddy? I don't remember. I don't have them in front of me. Do you happen to have them side by side, Scott or Jim, on what the Rams gave to the Titans for the number 1 pick compared to what the Eagles just gave to the Browns for the number 2 pick? Do you happen to have those, Jim?
No, I mean, I'm drawing from memory here. I think it was 2 number 2s this year, a number 3 this year, and a 1 and a 2 next year. Now, I'm not 100% on that, but I think that's right.
All right, I'm going to see if I can verify that, just because I'm kind of curious to see what the real value and difference is between 1 and 2. So let's see, the Titans, I'm just pulling something up from the Titans online. The Titans trade the pick to the Rams for the 15 overall, 2 number 2s this year, a 3rd rounder, number 76 overall this year, the 1st rounder in 2017, and the 3rd rounder in 2017.
So I think I might have that right.
Doesn't go into 2018. So is that what you just said?
No. I think so, but you do have to remember that they went from 15 to 1 as opposed to 8 to 2, so it's a bigger jump.
Indeed. So that's pretty good. I mean, what the Browns got here, if you disagree with it, and I'm with you, I think you needed to grab your franchise quarterback there. There are enough names on the back of that jersey, and unless you really, really believe, and Hugh maybe does, that they can completely reclaim the potential and the glory that Robert Griffin might have inside of him, maybe that's what their thinking is here, because he's only 4 years in, for crying out loud. He's still very, very young. But
right.
But even if you disagree with it, You look at it, it's a pretty good haul given what we just compared side by side with what the Titans got for number 1.
Yep. I mean, I agree with that. It's a lot of picks. Now they have to use them right and hope they find a quarterback somewhere.
All right, good stuff. Well, Scott, I'm sure there's probably going to be a press conference announced sooner rather than later, and I know you got to go cover that. So thanks for squeezing in a conversation with us and the analysis. I'm with you. We'll wait and see if Wentz and or Goff turn out to be stars, or particularly whoever is taken number 2 by the Eagles, if he turns out to be a star, a la Big Ben, 15 years from now, we're going to be coming back and saying, remember way back in 2016 when the Browns could have taken Carson Wentz? My goodness. Scotty, thanks for the time, pal. Have a great one.
See you, Bob.
All right. Scott Petrak joining us with his insight and analysis of...
A couple other things as I'm looking into this, because it's so fascinating. First, I kept going through those old drafts. I decided not to stop at 1997, because, I have stupid curiosities. This is only the 4th time ever that 1 and 2 have been traded. Obviously this year, 97. The other 2 times were 1975, the top 3 got traded, and 1967 when the top 3 got traded. And
so
the other
1967, 19, what was it, 75?
75.
1997.
And 2016.
And 2016, the only times in history that the top two picks have been traded in the same draft.
And in 75-67, the third pick got traded away in those drafts as well. The other thing is, you know, this is my big thing, because ever since the Rams-Titans deal, what was that, about a week and a half ago now,
yeah.
I've been in the camp of, you know, I know they still need a true going forward franchise quarterback, but the heck with it, trade down. That's been where I've been on ever since the whole Rams-Titans deal. And I think it does mean something that, for what it's worth, Bob, they have 12 total picks. Six of them are now in the top 100. And again, as I said to you guys a few minutes ago, I'm a firm believer. Now, obviously, the Browns' track record makes this a kind of moot, but I'm a firm believer that any normal NFL team should be able to get a starter out of the first three rounds and significant contributors in the fourth round. So Browns have six picks in the top 100, seven in those first four rounds overall. They better come away with something for once.
But you know what, man? Forget about it. Forget about it. I have no faith that that's going to happen.
Nor I at this point.
I hate to be as cynical as I sound, and I know I sound cynical. I probably sound like just a jerk. But I'm sorry. They have had high picks. I mean, they had two number ones last year.
Yep.
And then, so what did they have? They had four of the top 77. They had five of the top 96. Here's what they came away with. Danny Shelton, who was yawn. Literally, he was a yawn. Wasn't horrible. Didn't stand out. He was the number one overall pick, 12th overall. Their number one pick. He was an average defensive nose tackle.
Right.
Cameron Irving was your second number one pick at 19. He was awful. Nate Orchard, Duke Johnson, who has potential, but he's got potential, and that's it. We don't know. And Xavier Cooper. Those are your five players taken in the first 96 last year.
And whether you like it or not, that second pick of Cameron Irving, you're going to see a lot more of him along the line this year.
Exactly. Now let's go to the year before. They also had two number one picks then. Who has multiple number one picks in back-to-back years? This doesn't happen. And for the Browns, they had it three out of four years. They had two number ones in 2012. They had two number ones in 2014. They had two number ones in 2015. And in 2014, you want to see him? Want to hear him?
Yeah.
Justin Gilbert, who could not cover a stop sign.
He couldn't cover me.
He couldn't cover a stop sign that was literally planted in the ground.
That's
even worse.
He was
the number one overall, eighth, right? Eighth overall. And then, of course, we know the other one was Johnny Manziel at 22, who's out of football right now. Then with the number two pick overall, they took Joel Bitonio, who's actually one of the better linemen.
That's a decent pick.
Kirksey is just an okay linebacker. Terrence West isn't even with the team anymore.
Right.
So, Jim, this is 2 years in a row they had five picks in the top 100.
And really, there's only three four if you count Kirksey, that'll actually still make some kind of contributions,
Bitonio,
whether good or bad,
next year. Where are you getting four? I'll give you Bitonio and Shelton and maybe Johnson, Duke Johnson. That's it.
Cameron Irving, whether you like it or not, he's going to see time on the line. I've always been under the assumption when they drafted him.
When he sees time on the line, Jim, it's not going to be because he beat somebody out and earned it. It's because Alex Mack walked.
Yep.
And so did Mitchell Schwartz.
I said that last year, the moment they drafted Cameron Irving, that this is mostly an insurance pick when Alex Mack leaves.
If you want to, just for the sake of it, in 2013, their first round pick was Barkevius Mingo. He is probably awful. I don't want to call him a flat-out bust. He was the sixth overall pick. I'm going to call him a bust.
Yeah, for being the sixth overall, he's a bust. He's an average player, but at sixth overall, you got to be better than that.
Yeah, forget about it. He's not on the field every down.
Right.
He's not on the field really very often at all. Leon McFadden, a very average cornerback, was their third-round pick there. And then, again, going back to 2012, another year in which they had two ones, a two, a three, and a four. So, again, for Jiminy Christmas. Jim, in three of the last four drafts, they have had five picks in the top 100. Think about that.
They're going to have six this time.
And six this time, and we're supposed to be excited about that. In 2012, it was Trent Richardson, who just caught on with, his fourth team. He just got signed as a free agent by the Ravens. Not worried. Brandon Whedon, who's a backup in Dallas. Mitchell Schwartz, who just left as a free agent. John Hughes, who's one of the guys who has actually panned out, third-round pick, 87 overall on the D-line. And Travis Benjamin, who was, the 100th player taken.
Right.
He was, the Browns' best deep threat, not one of the best receivers in the league. And, of course, he left on a free agent contract with the Chargers. So from just 3 out of 4 drafts, the last 4, 5 picks in the top 100 in each of them. Of those 15 guys in the top 100 in each draft, you should probably expect about what? 11 or 12 starters and 3 or 4 backups who
from a competent franchise? Yes, that is what I would expect from a competent franchise.
From a competent franchise. And instead, I think I'll give you Schwartz as a player. John Hughes is a player. Benjamin is a player. I'll give you those 3. I'm going to go to Gilbert Manziel. Betonio's a player. That's 4. And then to last year, Shelton is an average. But I'll give it to you 5. I'll give you Duke Johnson a 6. So 6 out of 15 you can call. And that's being generous.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. 6 is being generous.
And the rest of them have been either average, below average, or bust. So sorry if I'm not excited about the deal that just brought 12 picks to the Browns in the first 6 rounds, in the 7-round draft this year in exchange for the number 2 overall pick that could have been your franchise quarterback.
I guess I'm saying it in this context, Bob, on the grounds that it is technically a new regime, so they don't have past screw-ups already under their belt.
How many times did you say
that
too?
But you're completely right. I can't help but not be cynically.
It's Banner making the pick now instead of Phil Savage.
Right.
And then Farmer now making the pick now instead of Banner. And Heckert make it, or set a Banner and Heckert, I should say. It's just over and over and over we've done this thing. I'm trying to think before that. Who was the GM before Phil Savage?
Was that Holmgren?
Doesn't matter. You get the point. Yeah, exactly. We're so past our time here. It's ridiculous. It's 3:45 for crying out loud. We haven't even done a commercial break. All right, we're gonna get a timeout. We're gonna get you a Sports Center here. I'd like to call it the bottom of the hour Sports Center, but I can't anymore officially. So we'll get you a 3:45 roughly Sports Center. And then we're going to come back, talk more about this Browns draft, trade, I should say. This is a big blockbuster trade today of the number 2 overall pick. Then we're going to just completely make a left turn at the top of the hour and talk NBA basketball. Pistons, Cavaliers, Game 3 tonight. David Mayo, MLive.com, will join us to break things down from the Pistons' point of view. Stan Van Gundy's got some complaints about the media. We'll hit that a little bit too. My goodness, we are packed, rocking and rolling, loaded for bear. Mix all of those metaphors together, and you've got the extravaganza right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Check out the podcast now at 106.5theticket.com. Now, back to Bob France, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Yeah, I love that, by the way. I love the podcast now. Don't forget to check that out on 106.5theticket.com. Excuse me. That's fantastic. What a great resource. If you miss part of the show, you miss some of the analysis, you miss an interview, or whatever it is that you wanted to catch, you can always listen to it again later or catch what you missed at 1065theticket.com by way of podcast. Also, don't forget, speaking of being online, we're really growing our social media presence as well as we expand and kind of merge it together with our on-air product. So make sure you follow us on social media. On Twitter, Sports Radio 1065. That's what you follow and interact with, even when we're off the air. Obviously, we'll continue to do that. And Facebook, it's 106.5 The Ticket. Make sure you like both of those pages or follow and like them respectively. Want to share this with you. NFL Network reaction to the Browns' big blockbuster deal today. They traded the number 2 overall pick to the Philadelphia Eagles in exchange for the Eagles' number 8 this year, the Eagles' third-round pick number 77 this year, the Eagles' fourth-round pick, number 100 this year, the Eagles' first-round pick next year, and the Eagles' second-round pick the year after that in 2018. So that's 5 picks that the Browns picked up. Overall, they are 2 1s, a 2, a 3, and a 4. That's what they got to move from number 2 back to number 8 in exchange with the Eagles. The Eagles also get the Browns' number the fourth-round pick of 2017 next year. In addition to the number 2 overall this year. So what does all that mean? How does it break down? Who's a winner? Who's a loser? This is Charlie Casserly, NFL Network's Charlie Casserly, weighing in on the decision that the Browns made to move that number 2 pick.
Charlie, your reaction to this big-time flip of picks in the top 10, as long as other picks between the Eagles and the Browns?
Well, a couple of quick things. First of all, as I've said, I said it this morning on HQ, I put Wentz second, and I don't think Cleveland's going to take him. There'll be a trade to get to him there. So, to me, the two quarterbacks were going to go 1-2. Hey, I like the concept. This is a three-year trade. It's spread out over 3 years for Philly. You can potentially make up a pick or two when you spread it out that long. For Cleveland, I like the investment in rebuilding. This trade never stops giving over the next 3 years. Finally, to me, this changes nothing about Paxton Lynch. From day one, all of us were saying quarterbacks are going to go 1-2. Paxton Lynch was going to be the third guy. If you want to reach for him and take him in the top 10, okay. This guy is a project guy. I like him, but to me, he's a much later type guy than these two guys right now.
And so, Charlie, we heard from Harry Roseman in the past hour. He said that the Eagles were going to stick with Sam Bradford, and they were simply investing in the quarterback position. Is that a new...
Looks like we lost the feed there of that for a second. But anyway, that was a little bit from Charlie Casserly, NFL Network, on the Browns trade. He makes a great point. He said he didn't feel that the Browns were going to be that high on Carson Wentz, and they weren't going to take him at number two. So clearly, they were interested in Jared Goff if they had the opportunity. And since it looks like that the Rams are pretty sweet on Goff and are going to take him, the Browns were going to move this pick and trade down, which, of course, they have. The question now is, are they really high? It sounds like Charlie Casserly is not as high on Paxton Lynch as maybe some other people are. Scott Petrak said he could see Lynch going to the Browns at number 8, or do the Browns move again down another 7 picks to number 15 and then perhaps talk about taking a quarterback later on? So that's the question here. I don't know what the answer is. What I do know is that this is a really, really bold gamble by the new regime of Sashi Brown and Paul De Podesta, and of course Jimmy Haslam, putting all of this faith into these guys and their analytics and all the rest. I just have a problem, as I said to Scott Petrak about 40 minutes ago. I have a problem turning the draft over to two non-football guys. And when I say non-football guys, that's not a slam at Sashi Brown. It's not. It's just that his role with the Browns organization the last few years under Jimmy Haslam have been business-related, legal-related. He's a lawyer. He's not a player personnel director. He's not a scout. And in no way, shape, or form has he been a GM. He's going to run the draft. Meanwhile, and then Paul De Podesta, for all of his brilliance, Moneyball, working with the Oakland A's, working with the New York Mets, helping to build championship teams there by way of analytics, to think that can just transition to the NFL, show me. You're going to have to show me. I'm not going to buy it. I'm not just going to buy into it and believe it until you show me. That's just the way I feel about it. You're going to have to bring it. Don't sing it. You're going to have to bring this to me. I'm not confident that listening to those two guys, a lawyer and a baseball guy, rather than trusting the football guy, the one football guy you've actually brought in to this new latest reboot of the Browns franchise, Hugh Jackson, he's not going to get the call. He's not going to be able to make the call on these picks, with the exception of the quarterback pick. They'll trust him on that, and that's about it. And maybe he did. Maybe he went to Sashi Brown and said, look, I'm not really loving what I see from Wentz. He's got a lot of potential, but it's a project-type thing, not really there. I do love what I see and hear from Robert Griffin. He and I see eye to eye. We've got the same potential, or not potential, the same goals. I know he's got the potential to reach them. He's still a young guy. He's just completed his fourth year. The guy has got incredible upside. He didn't even play this past year, so he's only got 3 years worth of wear and tear on him, by the way. He's fully recovered from the injuries that really changed his game when he was with Washington and came back way too soon after his leg was nearly cut off by Haloti Ngata, essentially. Dismembered. But he's fully recovered from that and from his disastrous decision to return too quickly from that ACL and more. This is our guy. Let's go fill the other holes. If Hugh Jackson makes that call, and that's why this trade happened, I feel better. Now listen to him when it comes to actually making the picks, because I don't trust Sashi Brown and Paul De Podesta based on their limited experience in this field. All right, that's it. We're going to take a timeout. We're going to make a very, very sharp turn into another direction after the top of the hour Sports Center, which is coming up here. We are going to talk about the Pistons and the Cavaliers game number 2 tonight in Cleveland. It's game number three at the Palace, by the way, on what would be Friday that I think the Browns are... I'm staring at the Browns trade on my screen. My apologies. That the Cavaliers, I think, are going to be in some trouble. I do expect the Cavaliers to take care of business tonight against the Pistons. I think the Pistons will put up a fight. Clearly, they are not intimidated by the Cavaliers of all teams. They are not intimidated at all, as they showed in Game 1. We'll see what happens in Game 2 tonight. A preview of that with David Mayo, who covers the Pistons for MLive.com. So we're going to try to transition from Browns to Cavaliers and Pistons, and maybe even react a little bit to what we saw last night in the NBA playoffs from the Spurs, who looked dominant once again against the Grizzlies, and more. So all of that coming up in hour number two of the Extravaganza right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.